Today's podcast is brought to you by the brand new Genesis GV80, the company's first ever SUV. The GV80 comes with signature Crest grille, available 22-inch wheels, and signature quad LED headlights that give the vehicle a muscular yet subdued look not currently seen on the market. The GV80's high beam assistance automatically switches from high beam to low beam when sensing oncoming traffic, and with an available 3D digital gauge cluster and a 14.5-inch infotainment screen, you can count on a high-definition display with split screen that simultaneously shows audiovisual data as well as navigational information. Find out what all the hype is really about. Visit Genesis.com to learn more about the Genesis GV80, boundless by design. Hey, and welcome to Tomorrow. I'm your host, Joshua Topolsky. Today on the podcast, we discuss BritBox, unsigned code, and monopolies. I don't want to waste 1 minute. Let's get right into it. All right, well, we're back.
Hello.
It's official. We're here. We exist.
We're queer. Get used to it.
Wow. It's true. It's also true. I'm just perusing some stuffing stalkers, and I gotta say, I'm liking what I'm seeing.
What are you thinking?
I don't know. I mean, there's so many gifts out there you can buy for someone. I don't have a lot of time, actually. I mean, I've gotten all of the people in my life gifts.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part.
I feel like this is this particular holiday where if you have everything you need, you have everything you need, and if you need stuff, it's cash. Like, that's really where we are as a nation.
It's hard to, I mean, you know, right. It's a very strange holiday season. And it's very difficult to, I don't know, what's luxury now? What is a gift now, right? What are the things that, I mean, these are questions that I'm currently asking both you and also Tony. And I'd like a response because I really need some ideas. No, but I mean, anyhow, so I like shopping. I mean, online shopping is the official American pastime.
Now.
It has eclipsed baseball as the official sport of Americans. Now, I don't know, but maybe forever from this point on.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know.
I will say, if I stay up too late and I have a couple glasses of wine, I get real squirrely about, like, maybe I should buy something. Like, why? I don't know why. It's like
right,
my brain
yes.
is so starved for serotonin.
Like, do you ever like just look at Amazon?
Mm-hmm.
Just to see what's on Amazon?
Of course. And I don't even like shopping for Amazon. I
right,
feel guilt
right,
every time.
Right.
And I
right,
open
exactly.
it up. I open it up and I go, I open Depop and I just scroll.
I was looking at a gift guide recently and they were like, one of their suggestions was a sexy coloring book.
Oh God.
and I'm just like, here's the thing.
No.
Here's the thing. I get it. I get you like to color. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. That's a great pastime. But who's the person who's legitimately like, I want the sexy coloring book?
Also, I'm sorry. I understand adult coloring books, they're very therapeutic. I've used them. It's a fun activity.
Yeah.
It is for little kids, and please don't make it sexy. I don't want
that. I mean, listen, there are people who are into, you know, whatever, you know, being like, you know,
I'm a baby,
whole,
gotta love
that's
me.
A whole thing. They dipe up, you know. And by the
dipe
way, no
up!
Judgment. No judgment here. No judgment.
You diping up, bro? Bro, you diped up?
I'm diped up right now, as always. I actually, that term, diped up, is basically from Katie Natopoulos, who, my sister-in-law, who,
of course it is,
who's also a writer at BuzzFeed, and she's just very, she's been very interested in, you know, fringe cultures, let's say.
Diaper culture.
So, diaper culture is one of her main bags. Anyhow, but so diped up is a phrase that's it's used around the house now. Anyhow, well, it's great when we had a baby, you know, it's like she diped up. Gifts. Yeah, it's this gift giving season. It's the holiday season. It's Hanukkah. It's the last day of Hanukkah right now as we record this. And then in a little bit less than a week, it'll be Xmas, which I, you know, is the official name now that there's been a war on it. And you know, it's a fun time normally. This year it's like, I don't know. I feel like anybody in any position is like, I don't know if I should be giving gifts this year. Yeah, like, I don't know if that's a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, everyone I know who I normally buy gifts for has like, we've locked eyes across a Zoom and been like, no gifts, no gifts. Wow. And that's locked a real nice.
Locked eyes across a Zoom is strangely poetic. Beautiful. But you got John something, right?
Yes, we got each other things for the apartment. So,
does he listen to this? If you said what it was, would he know?
He already knows. I already gave it to him.
Oh,
because we moved into the apartment together, and it was like we need stuff. Right. So if we're gonna spend, if we're gonna spend this much money, we'll just call it gifts. Because
yeah, you can't. So certain gifts when you're in a relationship, when you're married, there are things that you can't just give as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a conversation about it.
Yeah, and there are things you can't even just buy for yourself because you're like, this is a lot of money and I need to check in with you.
We went kind of ballistic with Zelda this year, I think, for Hanukkah and for Christmas. And I think it's a little bit because we just feel like Zelda doesn't need anything. I mean, she's what I wanted as a child. I'm now providing for her, which is like a set of parents who are really into things. Not that my parents weren't into things, but they didn't have like hobbies.
Yeah.
My parents didn't really have like stuff because they came from a generation of like, you didn't really have hobbies. I mean, they're like, roughly boomers, but they are not, they're very working class. Like my dad literally worked in a steel mill when he was like a teenager, and my mother is a school teacher, and they're very like, there was not a lot of room for, like, they didn't, like, we skied with my grandfather who had hobbies, but my parents didn't for whatever reason. Like, we skied when we were younger, and my brother Eric and I were always into stuff like skateboarding and whatever kids were into. But for them, it was like never, there was just never a side project.
Mm-mm. My parents liked TV. Sports.
Yeah, TV. No, TV. They love TV. They watch TV like it's a hobby.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. My dad every single day watches two episodes of Seinfeld like he's practicing for something.
Yeah. No, I mean, my parents are like big TV watchers. Mm-hmm. And they'll watch TV at the same time in separate rooms watching two different shows. And they will yell at each other across the house about what is going on in their individual shows. They're like, I would say actually of that generation, that may be a thing. It's like, they're kind of like TV was their internet.
Yeah.
And so they're sort of like professional TV watchers in their downtime, you know?
Well, that's why they all get sucked into YouTube so easily because it's the same thing as TV, but you just keep clicking and it's shorter. And also, like, there's not a lot of critical thinking that has to be done. Like, it was on TV. Nobody on TV would lie. You know what I mean? They get really sucked into that.
Yeah. I mean, it's true, which is how a generation of people ended up being Fox viewers.
Like, true.
It's just like the right time, right place. And now a generation will be Alex Jones viewers or whatever replaced Alex Jones.
Alex Jones's TikTok or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Alex Jones's TikTok, where he does hilarious dances while telling you
lizards
about how people are lizards and
turning the freaking frogs gay.
I love it. I love it. Gay frogs, I think, sounds fun to me.
Honestly, Senor Frogs. Yeah, they do drag weekends. It's fun.
Senor Frogs. Do you think that's the birthplace of the gay frogs thing? Is they do drag night at Senor Frogs, and therefore somebody was like, the frogs are gay now. At any rate,
not very, the toads, though. Stay strong, toads.
Well, toads are obviously very straight. Yeah. It's very, I mean, if you ask me what's the straightest animal, I'd be like, toads. Obviously.
That's no what question. Makes frog and toads' relationship so unbelievable.
People know this, that toads are aggressively conservative.
Super het
and MAGA. It's a well-known fact. At any rate, so wait, what were we talking about? What were
gifts.
We talking about?
We were talking about gifts.
Gifts, yes. They're very good. Very good. Yeah. I love them. Anyhow, with Zelda, we went really ballistic. But we saved a lot of... So we got a lot of things. We got some cool stuff, like... For both the holidays, because she celebrates both, because she's bi.
Lucky.
She's bi religion. And sorry, I was just scrolling Twitter in the background, and there's an ad for something which is a fire blanket, which is a blanket that you keep in your kitchen, and if you have a grease fire, you can throw it over the fire. And I'm just like, how? I know that grease fires happen. I'm just like, I'm surprised to see an ad for this. Twitter ads have gotten, I've started getting Twitter ads over the last like month or two, and they're so bad. They are like,
oh, they're the worst.
literally like around the web, you know, like what or else?
You can, you know, see like, the logic connection, but it's just wrong. Like I'll tweet something that's like I'll tweet something about politics and I'll be like, oh, Lucy and the football again or whatever, and then my next 50 ads are like NFL Sunday night package, and I'm like, I could not be the target audience less. Like
they're just bad
or they're completely random suit. Like they're just like a random guy from like, you know, Tel Aviv came up with like a pun and then he promoted his tweet, and then that shows up in my timeline.
Those I get all the time too. I'm like, what are you trying to do here?
You have 250 followers. It's clearly not working.
Yeah. It's what is this? At any rate, so we got her a lot of good gifts for both holidays, but there's a few that we're holding that I'm excited about. Well, one is we got her a telescope to look at the stars, like a real, well, I mean, it's like a beginner, it's not like a total beginner. You know, it was very hard to find one, actually. They're all sold out everywhere because everybody's like, I'm at home. What do I do? Like, what about a telescope?
Yeah.
Plus, which, you know,
you got that whole Elon Musk thing going on.
I guess so. But so we got a telescope, which was very hard to track down. I had to like really use my shopping skills like during this holiday season. I got her this cool thing, which frankly is honestly, I think might be more of a gift from me than anybody, but somebody makes this, this company makes this. I should find out what the name of the company is while I'm talking about it. They make a Pico 8 arcade cabinet that you build the cabinet. It's got a 10-inch screen, and then it comes with like a copy of the Pico 8 because you can buy like Pico 8, which is like a game, programming toolkit or whatever to make these like little games. Like, anyhow, it's really cool. So we're going to build it because she really wants to make video games. She's talked a lot about me learning to code. She's actually like a gamer gator. She's like, you should learn to code. And I'm like, that's actually not a bad idea. In fact, one of the reasons I got a Mac M1, I don't know if we've talked about this or not. I got an M1 Air. One of the reasons was because I started messing around with Swift Playgrounds on my iPad. And I was like, this is actually the first time I've ever been able to understand how code kind of works, or at least start to think about it in a way that seems like could lead to coding. And I was like, I really should have a good Mac to do this on.
Wait, isn't it really true, though, that like when I read the Book of Code, which many Tonys have reached out for and given rave reviews, so if you're into it, reach out. But when I read that book about code, and I've done these like coding playground
things. Which book
things,
about code? What is the book about code?
Code, the Hidden Language of Computer Hardware and Software.
Yeah. Okay, I should read this.
It's very good. It's fascinating. But it finally like started. It's by Charles Petzold.
I feel like you told me about this. But
yes,
go on,
it's very good. I finally started understanding code. And when I've done those playgrounds or like, you know, those little apps they have to like every day teach yourself a little. The only thing I walk away from that thinking is like, everything must be so complicated to put together that I bitch and moan about. Like, it must be really difficult.
No. 100%, you do get an appreciation for, I mean, of course you get an appreciation for, I know that I like going through the earliest parts of that. I'm like, this is in no way actual code. Like, this is the most surface stuff to like show me some basic ideas. And I know underneath this is the code that actually makes all the stuff that I'm like the code that I'm doing is sitting on top of a bunch of code to make much more complicated things, which even those things are not really that complicated. And I'm like, this is so, it's such a being really good at coding is very much like playing an instrument well, right?
Totally.
Like it is, there are, of course, there are people who have a natural talent. But if you practice and you really want to learn, you can learn to play an instrument well. Like, your body can learn to do the things.
It's
your
like
brain can learn to do the things.
Or Go, where, like, you can learn it.
Right. I mean, yes. But even, like, chess and Go require, like, this competitive thinking that, like, the reality of, like, playing a guitar is that there is a way to play the guitar. Like, when you learn how to hold the guitar and how to strum it and how to, like, you know, put your fingers in the right places on the frets, like, you will begin to play the guitar. Like, it is not a thing that's like, unless you have a natural ability, you'll never be able to strum this thing and get a C chord or whatever. It's like, you will be able to play a fucking C. Like, there's no question. But like, you know, you do it enough, you get really good at it. Next thing you know, not everybody's Eddie Van Halen, but there are a lot of people on YouTube, okay? People who are, do not have the careers of Eddie Van Halen who can play the fuck out of the guitar, right? Mm-hmm. So Code to me is kind of like that, where it's like, but with a guitar, I sort of can do, I can understand basic things like, oh, I strum it, I hold it this way, I put my fingers here, I strum it, I get a sound that sounds like music to me. Like, it's very easy to approach. Code is not like that. Code is like, there has not, I've never in my life, until this moment maybe, and I guess like hats off to Apple, been able to like look at something and go, okay, I sort of understand what you're talking about now. Like, I kind of know what you're saying. Like, I understand an if statement. I understand if then now better than I've ever understood it, because you've showed it to me in a way that really kind of clicks. But anyhow, so I got this M1. I got the M1 MacBook Air because I was like, I'm going to use this as my, I'm going to do some code on this. Anyhow, the Swift, what's cool about Swift Playgrounds, and I recommend it if you have an iPad or a Mac, it also like syncs between the two. So all of the work I did on my iPad, which I found to be so difficult because I fucking hate typing on it, and just hate the constraints of the format of the platform, but it syncs over, so now I can pick up my work and stuff. But anyhow, getting back to, so I got her, so we got her the Pico 8 thing, which is cool. I'm excited, like maybe we'll make a little game together if I can figure it out, and she can figure it out. We got a telescope, which I think I'm not sure how she's gonna feel about it. But one of the cool, you know, what's interesting about kids, one of the coolest things that we got for her for Hanukkah is this, like, there's somebody made this company, I think it's called Lulu and Me or something. They made this thing called, it's like a comic book creation kit, and it comes with a bunch of pages that are like comic book pages and markers and pens and like some instructions, and you do a comic in it, and then you send it to them and they print a comic book and send it back to you.
Ooh.
Like an actual like glossy comic book, which is really fucking cool, and she's really into it, you know? Like it's so often it's interesting just like the simple things that really connect. Anyhow, she's in like Minecraft world now. But so I've been doing a lot of shopping, and some of it I've ended up buying stuff for myself. I've bought a lot of stuff for myself. Do you do this? Like when you're shopping for other people, you end up with like a ton of shit that you were not going to buy. I mean, I'm so dumb and bad. But anyhow, I got this new Mac. And one of the things I've been thinking, because, you know, I've been using the Surface for a long time, and I'm gaming on my PC all the time. And I have to say, like, I don't feel like I'm – like, there's things the Mac does really well, and I'm like, that's great. But I would say the number one feature of the Mac that I had missed was that, like, my iMessages show up on it, and it makes it easier to have chats with people who I text with. And it's like, that's not much of a feature, you know? That, and it's easier to do, like, curly quotes, which we use on the website. And Windows, I had to like get a macro app and program my own key commands for to do them, because they're like, oh, you want to use a curly quote? That'll be, you just go open a Windows like special characters app and scroll through all of the ASCII characters.
Honestly, it's a little bit like Windows' screenshot situation, which is just like, guys, it's like a core function of the operating system.
No, they're like, yeah, just hit print screen. No problem. It's crazy. Anyhow, but it's true though. Okay, but anyhow, so that it's that, and it's like, it's, you know, there are things you could do that are easier, but I have to say, like, and the battery life seems great. But I will say that the window between, no pun intended, the window between like using a computer, like everything now, like it's so much like Android and iOS, they all are fine. It's all fine. Windows has gotten so much better than it ever was. Like, just for everybody, if you're wondering, Windows is the best it's ever been. It's still a complete chaotic shit show, but it is pretty good. Like, it does most of the stuff
we were talking about code for 2 seconds, and I think it's a similar thing with Windows, is that, like, I can bitch and moan a lot about how Mac or Windows does stuff, but, like, at the end of the day, even more so to an even bigger degree, Windows. What Windows is managing to pull off 24 hours a day, 7 days a week around the world. Like, I know for a fact that there are engineers, software engineers at Microsoft who are not entirely certain how some parts of the operating system are continuing to work, but they are, so they don't mess with it. And the fact that they're able to create a secure operating system that works for so many different use cases, shocking. Like, really cool. Great work, guys. I have no idea how you do it.
When you think, what's crazy is the entire gaming industry is based around essentially PC architecture. I mean, obviously Microsoft, the Xbox is running some version of Windows. So the PS5, I believe, is some variation of Linux, Unix or Linux, right? And it, but the hardware, and certainly the game, I assume the game development is all taking place on, is all PC based, right? I mean, essentially like hardware built for a Microsoft / Windows world. And like, you know, I think it's kind of striking to me, you know, the Cyberpunk thing. And I do want to talk about Cyberpunk again, because it's been a week of playing now and I have a lot to say. But to that point, like, you know, you saw this huge thing happen with Cyberpunk where people are like, oh yeah, the PC version's really, really, well, good in the sense of like it looks really good.
Yeah.
It looks like what everybody, and then you've got these like these console versions, which are kind of the second rate variations of the game, you know? And like that's a huge inversion of what we've known for a long time, but also it is striking when you think about like where the, you know, this Apple Microsoft war that used to exist about operating systems, about who owned what, and you see how it's divided in these really, I think, unexpected lines. I mean, if you had gone back in time 20 years ago and you said, here's what's going to happen, Microsoft and PCs are going to drive, like, I mean, first off, they really do drive like massive parts of industry. Like they are the foundation for, you know, to your point about like these, you know,
I mean, everything from cash registers to satellites to like, you know, like everything pretty much runs on.
Yeah.
I mean, every taxi has a Windows computer in it.
From an infrastructure, I've seen them all blue screen. From an infrastructure perspective, you know, Windows is just has a massive footprint, right? And then, you know, so you say, okay, well, hey, here's what's going to happen. Windows will run pretty much everything that exists in like the enterprise space, and also will be the foundation for all of the most advanced, you know, AAA gaming in the universe. And Apple's going to have this like huge monopoly on, you know, to some extent, the mobile market. Not
yeah,
a monopoly,
it's kind
but
of
a near
shocking
monopoly.
Because like a lot of video editors and certainly special effects houses pretty much strictly use Windows computers now, which is so funny because I remember in the mid 2000s, the only place I had ever seen a Mac before I bought one was in our photo lab at school.
Yes. Oh my
because
God.
Because they were like the art computer. I mean, that's
dude,
before Apple II. Obviously, we had Apple IIs in the elementary school.
When I was producing music professionally, you know, you would go into a studio and you would see, I mean, 9 times out of 10, you would see a Tower Mac that's running Pro Tools. Some people ran Logic. It was fewer and further between. But they were like the pro. If you, you know, a pro setup was a, it was not Windows. It was a Mac. You know, that was the gold standard. If you went to a video editing house, they were not running, most of them were not running.
It was that gray plastic Mac Tower.
They were running, yeah, they were running or an array of Mac Towers or whatever. But like, you know, with, in, you know, whatever Final Cut or whatever they were using.
And
but
you were like this has got a G5.
I mean, every time, and anytime I ever went like to, you know, like a mastering house in New York, you know, I went to some of the biggest mastering houses to master records. This is not a brag. It's just like you go, they are accessible. You book time and you go in. And they were, it's like, you know, these, I'd be in these rooms and I'm like, oh my God, it'd be so sick to have a room like this where it's like the best Mac you can buy running, you know, whatever the latest version of the software is, you know, connected to these massive analog mastering consoles and stuff. And it's like, but now that, it's funny, we used to have, I mean, I remember when we started doing video at Engadget, and then once we took, you know, the team and we went over and they were doing stuff for The Verge and really building up what has become such a huge sort of known, sort of well-known style of, you know, originally it was like Mac everything. And gradually I watched those guys who are like the best video directors, producers, and editors that I know gravitate towards building their own PCs and using PCs and going like, yeah, actually I can build a much more powerful system and do exactly the same thing. I think that was the moment where it really connected for me that like,
well, it was also like the Adobe suite of it all became, obviously the subscription thing helped, right? Because you could log in anywhere.
Yeah.
But also,
yeah. Well, that was later. I mean, that was, that's come.
Yes.
Very...
But also Adobe has always given you so much more granular control. And when their UI started to catch up with like the actual ability of like the granular level of editing that you could do, then people were like, well, why would I stay on like Apple, Apple still heavily suggests you use templates. And it's like, I don't think most people are going to be using templates.
It's interesting. I mean, and I think, well, you know, it's funny though, going back to the coding thing, it's like the coding situation, I was like, well, I could probably start doing this on on my Surface, and I started looking at like what is on offer for like you want to get into coding. Like it's like Visual Basic, and it's like it is just to install Visual Basic is like, or Visual Studio, which it's now called, was like, oh God, what am I getting into? They're like, you need these components. It's like, do you want this? And it's like, I don't know. I don't know. Like, please, I just want to start. Can you show me how to start?
I just want like a Duolingo. Well, I was like,
before I decided to buy the M1, I was like, you know, maybe I can do Swift development on my Surface just to play around. And they're like, oh yeah, like Visual Studio now incorporates Swift. And I'm like, cool. I have yet to be able to figure out how to like begin doing anything with Swift on my PC. I'm just like, this is very confusing and hard to do. So it's just, but yet the high end, I've run the you know, Unreal Studio or whatever the fuck it's called on my PC and played around with it. And it's like, you know, some of the highest end game development that's happening is definitely absolutely 100% not happening on Macs. It's happening on Windows computers. And so anyhow, it's just interesting to see how the industry has broken down. And now like, I mean, all the stuff we used to care about and worry about seems so background. Like, you want to edit video? Well, you can do it on any of these platforms. Like, you need a great mobile device that takes great pictures? Like, there's so many options now. And, you know, there used to be a time when, now the iPhone still takes incredible pictures, maybe the best in the industry, or at least it's in the top tier, but it has stiff competition now. There are plenty of Android devices that I'm like, wow. Those photos are insane. Like I want to be using that camera. And it's funny how, you know, how much that's shifted over time, and how the, you know, as this stuff progresses, as the industries mature, the fine lines get so much thinner between the devices and their capabilities. And it is like, what are the differentiators now? And I think like what people have hung on to, and this actually comes right back to the iMessage thing. What people have managed to hang on to, and what they hang on to now increasingly, is their ability to monopolize like a specific experience on their platform. Like tomorrow, if Apple announced that iMessage was going to become actually cross-platform, and you could use it on Windows and you could use it on Android, I think like it would tank. It would in many ways tank Apple. That one little thing, right? Because it just doesn't matter that much anymore. Like it's as simple as who do you communicate with, and what, you know, is it easy to do or not? But the actual differences between,
I mean, that the app experiences across platforms are very similar, and yeah. So the underlying OS isn't doing really most of what you're asking it to do. Like when I switched to Android, it wasn't that big of a jump because like it has Apple Music and Spotify, and it has Twitter, and it has,
right,
you know,
Chrome same Gmail, everything.
Chrome is syncing, yeah, everything, has the exact same games. Like, it's, yeah, not like a huge deal. It's also just, say, obviously a duopoly in any industry, especially that the tech industry seems to love, yeah, a duo or triopoly.
Well, we have a triopoly, which, yeah, but everybody has their own little corner now, you know, yeah, and everybody's fighting, and Amazon's and Google are now fighting for separate other corners. And it's like, you know, it would be great if there was some way to not have it, if there was room for competitors in this space. But what we're talking about is such fundamental stuff. There hasn't been a competitor in like video editing suites since Amiga went out of business, you know, like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, literally.
Obviously, you want standards and you want organizing bodies to create things like Wi-Fi and USB.
Yes.
But some things can't just be an organized standard. They have to be maintained. And so then you have one corporation, and then we're using it as a standard. But really, like Google search, where you're just like, yeah, I mean, Bing exists, but everybody's using Google search, and there's one private company maintaining this. And that's not really a great scenario. Like, well, we should have some say.
No, I mean, that actually is what I was going to say, is that the real unifier in the shared platform is really the internet, you know. And even like to your point, yeah, about Adobe, the operating system is secondary.
100%. 100%.
The operating system of our universe is the internet in many ways. And frankly, so many of the things that we've just talked about would be blank screens without the internet, but also they have internet components or internet variations that are, in more often than not, are the things that I'm engaging with and using, right? Like it's very, I mean, when you think about iMessage is just a front for a set of protocols, you know, that are really internet based. And like you get to that question about things like search. And it's interesting. I mean, I was just talking about this with Laura last night. Laura and I were talking about, you know, we're obviously building. It's very snowy here. There's like 10 inches of snow on the ground where we live. And we're like, let's, you know, we're building fires. We're alternating between Duraflame because we have a very narrow fireplace and we're lazy, and, you know, real logs. And, you know, Laura's like, there's got to be a better way, like, to build a fire that really lasts. I've used the upside down method. If I'm building a real fire, which does last a long time, I'm like, well, maybe there's something else. So I search for, like, how to build a long-lasting fire. And the first thing I get, the first thing I see is a list of ads for products related to fires. Okay? Like that is not, from a user perspective, that is not a positive. That is a, now, if I'm looking to buy something, it obviously makes sense. So if I said, like, where to buy logs, or where to buy Duraflame, or where to buy fire. Where to buy fire, exactly. If I'd been searching for, but literally I was searching for, like, I need to know something. Is there a place, is there a resource on the internet that can show me? And what I got instead was a bunch of ads. Literally took up my entire viewport on my phone of shit that it was absolutely unrelated to what I'm searching for. Not related at all. It was really unrelated stuff. Like, here's a personal fireplace for your desk. It's like, yeah, that's not what I'm talking about. You know, I don't need like a goofy USB gadget that I plug into my computer. Like, I'm looking for information. And I do think, like, Google, an unregulated Google that's just had 20 years to do whatever they want with the internet has been, on more often than not, when I search for something, I'm talking about pure search. I'm not talking about their I'm not talking about their email product. I'm not talking about their calendar product. I think Google has developed some great products that I use all the time and I'm consistently happy with. Search has gotten consistently worse in a lot of ways. And now I never
find what I want to find ever.
I mean, they'll tell you that like their search has gotten better and better. And I don't disagree that their search is very good.
The main way I find what I want to find is to put the keywords in and then put in Reddit and then find a human being who posted a link on Reddit.
That's right. But what's happened is I've become a better cog in the machine that Google has created for searching. It's not that their search, I believe that their search has not gotten, for what human purposes, has not necessarily gotten that much better. It's that humans have gotten better at figuring out how to use their tool to get the results they want, because the tool itself is actually not, on a typical basis, is not giving them the thing that they want. And like, I do think there's something truly, really troubling about it and really problematic about it. It's just like how Amazon is looking at shopping habits to generate its own products, right? It's like, oh, people are buying paper towels. We should make paper towels, you know? And it's like suddenly when I'm trying to buy the paper towels that I rely on or whatever, I'm buying like Amazon paper towels.
But it's also the Amazon button, right? Like it's like they have changed we used Amazon to shop. They created one-click buttons. We got used to clicking one click to buy things. And now they created, they've discontinued them, but it got so far that they created physical buttons.
I forgot about the buttons.
You could just push and then it would send you things. And that's so bad. That is so far beyond what, like, it has changed the way we think about shopping, which is that it's a compulsive thing.
Right. I do think that there are real issues to address. And I think that as we get into a Biden administration where it sounds like and looks like we're going to have some people with functioning brains, talking about regulation, people like Elizabeth Warren, who, you know, listen, I may disagree with some of her ideas, but I do think we're having the conversation not about, oppressing conservative viewpoints, which is all the Republicans, like when they talk about the internet, they're like, I tried to Google myself and it didn't come up.
I don't have enough Twitter followers.
I mean, it's literally like that kind of shit, but like there's real issues, right? There's real, real fundamental issues. And like, I do think there is something to say about if the internet is the operating system of the world, which it increasingly is, and frankly, the operating system in which we all are, you know, either passengers or users, then we need to think really critically about how it works for us or doesn't work for us. And I think something like search, as simple as it may seem, it needs to be, we need to open it up. We need to do surgery on a grape and also on search and just say, what is it? What is it that, that makes you think that when I search for how to build a long lasting fire, which is a very specific question, that you think I want to buy stuff that is not, has nothing to do with what I'm looking for?
It's because they don't care about, they only care if you want to buy something. If you don't want to buy something, they're like, all right, well, let us know when you do. Because they've built, they organize the world's information. Absolutely, that is a thing that they do. No one's going to deny that. But they, their first priority is organizing the world's advertising, by far. And so if you're coming to them for anything but advertising, they're like, okay. I mean, it's like you go to McDonald's and you're like, hi, can I get a salad? They're like, I mean, yes, you can, but it's not what this place is designed for. And we're certainly not going to make it like easy. What we would like you to buy is, and then, you know, it's a bunch of garbage. But I think, you know, that is kind of the problem with, I mean, we're just getting down to like capitalism is the core of all evil.
Yes, capitalism is the problem.
But that's the problem with basing something like organizing the world's information entirely on its entire business model. I mean, even that it needs a business model, like for something as important as information. So yeah. When we've decided that the brightest minds are going to be valued only for if they can get us to buy stuff, that's fucking crazy. Of course, we're hurtling towards collapse.
What is insane, what truly is like when you just get right down to it, is this idea that the right way to create a search product for the entire world to find things on the most vast system of information ever created is to make it profitable by putting ads around everything that you search for. Like, if you just get down to the basic idea, it would be like that we were like, hey, the dictionary, very important. People need to know words. They need to know how to spell them. They need to know what they mean. They need to know what context to use them in. But we can't, people won't buy the dictionary. You know, they're not going to pay
it's
money
like
for a dictionary.
Traffic signs with advertisements.
So what we're going to have to do is every three words, there'll be an ad for something related to that word. It's like, this is insane. It should not be that way. There should be, and I understand there are other services, but this, there needs to be a way to get off of this particular line of thinking, which I believe is really, really fundamentally broken, is that everything that you can show people, you can give it to them for free if you simply put an ad around it. Now, we are part of an ad-supported media business, right? And I do think there are places where ad-supported media makes a lot of sense. And I believe there are places where I don't think all advertising is bad. I understand its utility. I don't think all ads are inherently evil in
nature.
I don't think compelling someone to buy something or telling them that something exists so that they can know that they can buy it is an evil thing. Like, listen, we live in a capitalist society. If we break the structure of capitalism completely, then we can talk about all sorts of other ways to exist. Okay, but like the reality of it is like Google could be different. Google could be different. Their competitors could be different. The way that we find things could be different. The way that we surface information could be different. Facebook could be very different if it wanted to be.
Today's podcast is brought to you by our partners at Genesis, who are celebrating the release of their first ever SUV, the Genesis GV80. No matter what road you choose to take this year, you'll want a vehicle that has you covered, from powerful engines and custom safety features to the types of unexpected luxuries that once you have, you'll wonder how you ever lived without. The GV80 is the full package, with available 375 horsepower and a 3.5-liter engine paired with an 8-speed automatic transmission. You get massive power out of this luxury SUV. Be the first to experience the new era of what a modern luxury SUV should be. Visit Genesis.com to learn more about the Genesis GV80. Boundless by design. Facebook put out multiple full-page print ads calling out Apple as a response to Apple wanting to create a sort of nutrition label for privacy on apps, where you would be able to look at an app and be like, oh, that's a lot of data, and I don't think it's right for me, and not purchase it. Facebook obviously heavily abuses its ability. I mean, Facebook was caught trying to play MP3s of silence in the background on your phone so that it wouldn't have to close its app and obey privacy and security rules. It could just keep running and collecting data. Facebook was caught turning the camera on Instagram when you weren't using the camera. I mean, Facebook's been caught trying to soak up. They were paying teenagers to give them private data. I mean, they're obviously they will do anything they can to get their hands on this data. And so Apple is stepping in and saying, like, well, there should be some limits and we have to protect our consumers. And we would like to create features on our devices to make them competitive to say, you know, when you buy an Apple product, you know that you're getting some level of privacy. And Facebook obviously doesn't want this. So they put out an ad saying that, you know, this will hurt small businesses. They're like, look, more than 10 million businesses use our advertising tools every month. And, you know, as much as that's true, that is a fact, it's small businesses existed before Facebook. And it feels very much like Facebook is putting a gun to the head of small businesses during a global pandemic where one third of restaurants in New York have closed, maybe half at this point, and saying if Apple rolls out this feature, which will protect you from us, we'll fuck with your business.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's going to be a crazy few years. I mean, because the system for all these companies is built. I mean, they've built some pretty unsustainable systems. You know, they've built systems on, frankly, a lot of naivete, and on the fact that most people aren't paying attention. You know. Like Apple, I mean, Apple stuff is interesting. I mean, you know, say what you will about the Epic, you know, Apple battle. They've grown so much and they do control so much of the way these things work and how people are making money. And yet there's been no real inspection or questioning or it's certainly no regulation around it. It's just like very Wild West, but now we're not talking about a couple of border towns, you know? These are like metropolises. It's like it might have been the Wild West a decade ago, but now like Apple controls New York City and Facebook controls Los Angeles or whatever. These are not the actual places, but you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like they have enough weight and size and influence that this can no longer be treated as a
These are wars.
Passing, yeah, they're massive. You know, they're data wars, they're economic wars, they're platform wars. I mean, but there really is. I do think there's like a reckoning that's coming. I don't think people understand how bad it is, how much abuse there actually is happening at the platform level, in ways that are totally invisible.
I mean, if you can picture how much abuse has happened in politics in the last 4 years, and then think what a company like Facebook, who has information and power over basically everyone who's ever used a computer, if you think that in private they are not so abusive and slimy and underhanded, that when this stuff starts to come out, even when a little bit of it leaks out, it's headline news. So if Cambridge Analytica could do what it was doing with such a tiny slice of data. They had so little old data. I mean, the things that are going to come out when the government decides to take any action against these companies, I think is really going to be a reckoning like that we have not seen since like the jungle, Upton Sinclair. Yeah. Like, I don't think people really understand the rot that is happening in these companies. And I you know, it's to different degrees at different companies, but it's present in all of them. And something like Amazon or something like Facebook, before the U.S. has no global capital power to spend anymore, we need to like rein this shit in now, because it's only going to get more worse and it's only going to get more metastasized. In other Facebook news, I mean, they're creating AI that will do multiple things, right? So one of them is TLDR, which is an AI-powered tool that they're creating that will summarize news articles for you so that it just has the information you would have wanted to go in and get from it. And it also will come with like narration, so it could just speak it out. But that means that nobody will have to click on news articles anymore, which, if you've been following the state of media, wouldn't be great. And then they are also using AI to record your face and your face movements and basically create a deep fake of you for video calls. NVIDIA has also developed something similar. It's a little more unsettling to have Facebook doing it. And they want to basically create an AI face so that you can use less mobile data to do a FaceTime call, because you won't really be transmitting a picture of your face. They'll just be creating one on the fly and making it, you know, match what you're saying, which is a very unsettling thing for Facebook to have the power to do, is like own everybody's face and make them be able to say whatever it wants.
Yes, extremely disturbing.
And then they want to create one that will basically read the thoughts of people that are, like, they want to be able to create models of where it's neurally connected to people and then create models of how they react to things
either on their website or information in general or the news, and sort of build an ability to expand that out and have a working model of basically everyone's personality. And this is probably something we shouldn't let them make.
I mean, it's definitely, I mean, it's on the one hand, I'm like, well, it's very far-fetched. I mean, it's definitely like, it is like a West. It's
it is and it isn't. I mean, plot. Sometimes I open up Instagram and I'm like, I thought about peanuts and now they're selling me artisanal peanuts.
Yeah, I mean, but there is also the question of, I mean, yeah, obviously it's giving them any kind of further purchase to do, I mean, to do what Facebook does, giving them any more information, giving them any more data is terrifying, and having seen what they'll do with it. But there is an option for in many ways to not give them data, right? And I think, like, to me, I'm sort of curious when we get to the point, and I am, you know, I struggle with it personally. It's like I use Instagram, I do, and I enjoy it sometimes. And I have a Facebook account, which I don't really use. We've talked about this many times. I don't really go on Facebook ever, but it exists and it is connected to things. And certainly they're pooling data from other sources like Instagram and WhatsApp, which I use. But there is a choice. I could make a choice to not use any Facebook apps and not give Facebook very much data, right? They might know, they might be able to, like, you know, use an advertising ID, which increasingly is going to be harder for them, but to, like, track my shopping habits or whatever. Or maybe my search habits in some, you know, relatively anonymized way, slightly anonymized, maybe not anonymized at all. But there is no choice, right? I mean, we could just stop using Facebook. I mean, people could stop. If we all stop tomorrow, Facebook will go out of business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the question that I wonder is, like, where is the education side of it? When are we going to say, I totally get that people need to be on there for different reasons, but isn't it possible that maybe we don't need to be on there? You know,
I think that's certainly possible.
Like maybe we, like, don't we, can we, couldn't we just start to say, like, I don't know. I mean, why are we all on Facebook now?
I don't know.
Right. I don't know either.
I know I'm on it, or I've been on it for a lot longer than I would want to have been because of work stuff. Instagram is a separate thing. It's hard when you work in media to give up any sort of platform because everything feels so unstable and fragile. And it feels like, you know, if the New York media was to implode, or if my career was to implode, I would at least be able to have, like, a small following to go back to and try to create a Patreon or a podcast or an OnlyFans.
Right.
It's hard to say goodbye to that. And I think that while Facebook I've kept only because I need the advertising tools and, like, for events organization and work pages I need to manage. Other than that, I could just get rid of Facebook. Like, I don't really need it as an address book. I don't really need to see that. I don't need to see people's pictures of their kids on that website. I don't need to, like, I don't use it for a ton of stuff. But I'm stuck a little bit because of work, and I'm stuck a little bit because of my, like, Oculus headset or whatever other lock-in stuff they're trying
right.
to do. But Instagram, right. I kind of don't want to walk away from because I'm scared of leaving it. And that's probably... Right. Now that, right. I mean, I'm talking about out loud now, that's probably the main way Facebook will maintain its power, is to just threaten people, public figures, threaten journalists, threaten anyone whose voice, anyone whose job is having ideas or being seen or perceived in any way, threaten them, and then you have the monopoly on people posting their ideas.
It's hard.
It's going to take the government to step in and say, the people who run, who has what followers, can't also run VR, and they can't also have AI operations. And like there needs to be, these companies need to make deals with each other, and they need to be separate companies with competitors, and they need to have incentives other than world domination, because they have more money than God at this point. So their only incentive is right. to accrue more power.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I agree. I just think, I mean, I don't know. Will we all get to a point where there's a realization that, I mean, maybe Gen Z is going to have, I mean, are they on Facebook? Are they on, how much are they on Instagram? I mean, then again, it's just, you just go back, then you just end up with, like, TikTok.
Yeah.
Which is not any better, which is in some ways worse. I mean, look at poor Perez Hilton.
We just need, you know? We need regulations. We also just need strong guidelines of like all companies can't do this. All companies we have to agree can't do that. And I think the problem comes down to the public doesn't know how any of these companies work. They don't know how to vote for people who know how these companies work because they don't know how these companies work. You know what I mean? Like we're at a point now where like the education level of how technology works and what the dangers are and how we could work around it are, it's just so removed that it's like asking the government to regulate like medical or food service, or like you need entire departments and we have to trust the experts at those departments. We can't vote in politicians who understand Facebook because even the voters don't understand Facebook. And so right. There's just like, it's really difficult. We need someone who like, we need the president or a consortium of extremely intelligent senators who happen to be there at the same time, like the squad or something, to step in and be like, here's some common sense stuff. You know, like you can't sell user data as your business model. That's just the one thing you can't do. You know, like some basic things like that. But I don't know if we're going to get it. I mean, and certainly like there's the whole, people will just talk about how, well, then China will beat us. And then people in their fear of China and their xenophobia will give Facebook or Google license to do anything just because like the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And we, you know, they're American, quote unquote, even though none of these companies have any allegiance to any government in the world. They don't give a shit.
Certainly not. Certainly not. They pray to the almighty Bitcoin.
In other giant tech monopoly news, Stadia, Google's video game streaming experiment, is finally out on iOS so that Apple users can give it a try.
Apple users can finally play a game.
Yeah, Apple users can finally play a game. Obviously, Apple has some draconian App Store rules that do not allow for game streaming services or whatever, for whatever justification they made up. Essentially, Apple wants to sell games through its App Store, and it really doesn't like the idea of you having an unlimited subscription to games.
I mean, this is exactly the issue with Apple's whole deal with the way that they are moderating their stores. I mean,
it comes down to, honestly, I really think the government should step in and say, you have the right to run whatever code you want on whatever computer you own. And it doesn't matter.
There really should be a law, which is like, if you buy a computer and you want to run something on it, you're allowed to, and nobody can stop you. And you can, Apple can have a thing. It's like, hey, this could break the computer.
Don't do it. Oh my God, don't.
Yeah. Like, we don't need to be in a nanny state, an Apple nanny state. It's like I can run whatever I want on my Apple laptop. You give me a little warning now. You're like, hey, oh, that's not official. It's like, okay, still, but I'm going to install it and run it. And it's fine. I've survived my entire life. I've survived running applications on computers that has killed me.
Yeah, no, I don't know of any Android phones that have become sentient serial killers because someone installed an app.
It's like the reality is most people are going to use your storefront. Yeah. Most basic 99%
of people.
Yeah. Like the way you've set your stuff up, but it's like at this point, this has to end. It's ridiculous. On every platform, it needs to be like, you can, if you want to put an application on a computer you own, there should be nothing stopping.
And
you.
I believe
it's
this.
Absurd.
I believe this about game consoles too. I really do believe you should go after piracy if you want to go after piracy. But if I want to run an app on my PS5 or my Xbox that is a homebrew app or a Photos app or a third-party game store, whatever, I've spent $600 on this shit. I want to run an app. Let me run an app. It's none of your business.
And don't tell me that exact on the piracy piece. Don't tell me that you can't create a way for the system to know if it's running something that is pirated.
Also,
like you definitely can.
Frankly, you haven't stopped piracy yet. It doesn't seem like it's been.
But
working.
It's really simple. If you want to pirate on your PS5, it's going to take a lot of effort. Okay, you have to be really invested.
And
in
someone
it.
Is going to eventually do it.
But again, 99% of users aren't interested.
No normal person.
I mean, let me put you this way: I could have pirated Tenet. Okay, I could have easily pirated it. Mm-hmm. But instead, I bought that hunk of shit for $20 and watched it on my Apple TV the whole time going, I can't believe they let this person make this movie. And you know what? I'm fine. It's fine. I did what they wanted me to do. I spent my money. But it's like, I do think this is crazy. I think we're in a crazy situation where my phone can create like, you know, the most photorealistic AR in the world. But if I want to put an emulator app on it, Apple's like, nope, sorry. You're not allowed. It's like, okay, why?
And honestly,
why? Because you think it'll make the because you think it'll make the phone perform worse? Well, that's my choice. I can do. It's like give me a break.
But also, it comes down to they want to maintain control of and maintain their cut of games that you buy. And so, to that end, Google.
I get it. I totally get the monetary reasons, but like those shouldn't be a reason to not allow people to put software on their devices if they want to. I like there should be, to your point, there should be a regulatory action taken that says, if I own, just like anything else, if I own a computer and it's mine, I paid for it, and I want to install software on it, I should be able to install the software on it. You don't have to, they don't have to make special allowances for the software. They just have to make it possible. They have to make a mode of my phone that says, I can say, allow this thing to be installed as long as it runs on this, you know, if it runs on this hardware.
Well, because they don't, Google had to go around Apple and create what is called a progressive web app, which is a web app that is at a level that it can function very similar to a native app.
Yeah, but it's not.
It's essentially a
web wrapper. It's a wrapped, you know, web page, essentially.
Yes, and you have to jump through some hoops. You have to go to stadia.google.com, tap the share arrow, tap add to home screen.
It is user. It is bad for users. It is bad for competition. This is, to me, if there is anything that should be regulated, if you can regulate one thing on these devices, it's that you should be able to install the software you want to install on it. And if Apple needs to create a warning for stuff that doesn't come from their store, by all means, do it. But the idea that you literally, that I'm like, I want to play this. It certainly can run on iOS, but Apple doesn't want me to because they believe that I should pay a cut, that the company should pay a cut to them to just have a piece of software running on a phone.
And even then, they retain the right to veto software for whatever reason.
If anything, the M1 MacBook is the greatest argument in the world that what Apple's doing on their phones and tablets is absolutely outrageous. If you're telling me that the same chip, the same, like essentially the same architecture that powers your phones and your tablets, you're now putting into computers, which what, because they have an attached keyboard, are somehow a different beast, that I can run whatever software I want on my MacBook. But if I go switch over to my iPad, I'm suddenly...
You're on a baby.
I'm restrained. I'm held back. And yet I can run iPad apps on my MacBook. It's like this. It doesn't make any sense. Their argument just completely breaks down. It would be one thing if they said, well, you know, the architecture of these things are really not powerful enough to just run anything. So we have to be really careful because you could blow up the phone or whatever. You know, again, it's my phone. I can do whatever the fuck I want with it. But I think that the idea is now that... I mean, what is their argument? Their argument can only be is that we want to continue to have a monopoly. They cannot make the we believe what's best for users, because that would be painting every single user with the same stroke. And that's unfair to the user base. This is so user aggressive and so unfair to the people who are paying enormous amounts of money to use their products. It is outrageous.
Well, it's also, you know, Stadia didn't exist when I got into the Apple ecosystem. So then when it comes to exist, Apple now can turn around and say, well, you're not allowed to have it. And I'm like, well, I want to have it, and I already bought your thing. I can't go back and return it now, can I? And they're like, no. If you want to play with Stadia, you'll have to go buy an Android phone, which is just like a crazy... So Google does this workaround where you can play it through a Safari wrapper. To Google's credit, it works really well. I mean, Google found a way to make it work.
But I don't understand the argument here. If Netflix can, if I can download Netflix and stream Netflix films,
and Netflix interactive content,
right? I was gonna say Netflix has interactive content, which plays part kind of like a game.
What's the difference between a Netflix choose your own adventure movie and Telltale? What's the difference?
Zelda plays like Boss Baby interactive episodes on her iPad, and it's basically like a game to her. So you're telling me that I can do that on Netflix, but she has all these apps, like kids apps, that are like, oh, they have shows, but they also have these like mini games in them, which she plays all the time. They're not being purchased through the App Store. Nope. Some of them I think are stuff that I subscribe to that are completely separate from the App Store, like not through the App Store.
I mean, you can do remote access to a computer. Shadow does this. A remote access to a Shadow PC that you rent every month, and you can play games through it, but only because it launches you into an interface where you have to click to open the game. So it's technically a remote desktop, not a game streaming thing. Like, this is Stadia such bullshit. It's such nonsense.
But Stadia wouldn't be installing the games as an icon, an app on my phone.
No,
right?
It would just be creating an
interface to go to a library.
Yes.
Right? This is insane. I mean, the idea that we have to jump through hoops to let them have an app that does exactly what Netflix does, except you can use a Bluetooth controller to play games on it, is just an outrage. It should be an outrage to everyone. I understand if you're talking about, you know, you're downloading these games and they're installing on the phone and, you know, you can't. But we're talking about a streaming service.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. It's
streaming video where you send back and inputs.
I mean, what we're talking about is a fundamentally no different than Netflix.
No.
And if Netflix can do what it does, then the idea that there would be any limitation on something for Stadia is outrageous and insane. And I really think, like, this is exactly, I mean, the greatest case for regulation, I mean, ever. In my opinion, users are being hamstrung in this way that just makes no sense. It just is like, it defies logic to me, you know. I think this is crazy to me. Like, Apple's shot itself in the foot here in a way that is sort of beyond belief.
I mean, if anything, all this means is that I can now play Stadia on my iPhone, and I resent Apple. That is really what the end result of this is. I still play Stadia through Safari. I just think every time, fuck Apple, I don't like this.
Why make it so shitty and hard? You know, I just don't understand. I can't compute why you'd make this so difficult for users. And it's just like, yeah, I'm sort of like, whatever justification they might have just is going to fall flat. I think this is wrong. I think that they're in the wrong on this one. And I think that it's user aggressive. I mean, having this conversation and thinking about it, like really thinking through it, makes me want to stop using Apple products. It makes me want to leave Apple's ecosystem for one that where I don't have to even talk about this.
I mean, but then you have to pick between the shady things that one company is doing versus the shady things another company is doing. And nobody's stepping in to say, hey, all of you are being shady and none of you are allowed to be shady. You have more money than God. You don't need to abuse customers in order to stay afloat. So cut it out. You know what I mean? Like, government regulation has to step in, and we have to pray that our smarter representatives are able to hold Joe Biden's administration up to the level of like scrutiny that is, it's just necessary. We're rounding a corner with things like AI and climate change, where if we don't take like big technological steps right now, we're completely fucked.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem it's crazy that they're even trying to hold ground on this, that we're having this conversation is outrageous. It has to change. I just think they're in the wrong. I just think they're terribly in the wrong on this one, and that it is going to lead to regulation that they probably don't want. They're hastening regulation.
Well,
in my opinion.
Speaking of gaming things that that we don't want, Nintendo has always had a difficult relationship with the internet. They've always struggled to understand online gaming. They've struggled to understand how people shop on the internet. They do not like game syncing between platforms. They don't like backing up cloud saves for games that they think they need control over, like Animal Crossing. They don't want people to cheat by like cloning their island or whatever. Like, they're very, very scared of the internet. And for a long time, Nintendo had this program called the Partner Program, and that was the only way that if you were a YouTuber, you could paste any footage of Nintendo games on the internet, and you would have to give them a cut of your earnings. It was obviously very onerous and not common in the game industry. It was a very weird thing about Nintendo. They were forced to retire that in 2018 because creators just, like, it's impossible to control that. But Nintendo has spent the last year, we have a piece on the site by Samuel Pole. They've spent the last year basically deciding that they were going to declare war on the internet, esports, their biggest fans. And in the last few months, I mean, they've cut ties with huge YouTubers who are completely dedicated to Nintendo and are nothing but positive because they did something like make a video of like weird Zelda mods that people made for older games. They cut ties with these people. They have sued Melee esports players because they were playing because of the pandemic, they can't play in person on physical GameCubes. So they did a workaround where it's perfectly legal to rip a game from a disc, which they did, and run it in an emulator, which they did. But they were trying to use this software to do online gaming with it and sort of making it so that Melee, which is obviously not an online game, could be played from people's homes to keep them safe. And Nintendo stepped in and shut all of that down. Now, legally, they don't need to do this. This is not like many companies. Disney Disney has full control over the Disney Princess line, right? But people still sell buttons or have fan meetups or talk about Disney princesses on the internet, and Disney doesn't come sue them because obviously that's not in Disney's best interest to piss off those people.
It's free advertising. Well, they sue some people, but I think it has to rise to a certain level.
It's probably not trademark individuals. You need to be using the character names. Like, there is a whole Etsy community where they make Disney-inspired stuff. If you're using, like, the name Ariel, the Little Mermaid, yes, they will tell you, please don't use that name. But they're not going to try to shut down, like, the groups of adults that get together and come up with Disney-inspired outfits and go on Disney trips together. Like, that's good for them, and that's good advertising, and it's good fan relations. Nintendo has now shut down a Splatoon festival that they were running that had their approval because the players there had expressed online that they thought that they were unfair to the Melee tournament. Nintendo is now there was a Twitch streamer named Atika who committed suicide, and obviously it was very tragic and the community was mourning, and the people that were close with Atika created these Atikons, which were these Joy-Con shells, these little snap-on plastic pieces that were in his memory and themed by his channel, and they used it to raise money towards the Jed Foundation, which supports mental health of teenagers and young adults. But they jokingly call themselves the Joy-Con Boys with a Z when they put together the like fundraiser, and Nintendo shut them down and made them like, it's a step beyond. Like, Sony shut down people who are making fake PS5 side panels, obviously because it's a safety issue. Those things can overheat. They were trying to make money on Sony's trademarks and copyrights. And obviously, Sony has its own licensing situation where you can create accessories for the PS5, and these people tried to go around it. Obviously, that's a very different situation than fans creating bespoke custom paint jobs to raise money for like young people who commit suicide. And Nintendo, this is part of a pattern where I think it's bad for them as a company, but I also think it's really bad for like the industry. Like, it's a bad precedent to set that like you're not allowed to play a game competitively unless you have that company's approval is like not a,
I mean, I have no way of gauging why. I think they're just out of touch. I mean, I think that, I think that it's just a, you know, they're a classic company that in some ways they're a lot like Apple. I mean, I think that they are actually, it's funny to talk about this after talking about Apple. I think it's their way of running their business is very reminiscent of what Apple does, which is like they kind of are behind the curve in terms of where audiences, where users and where sort of culture is going. They are an important mega like a focal point of culture, and yet fail to have this weird blind spot for what's like coming, what's around the curve, right? It's like they're so busy focused on their own like pet projects that they can't see what's happening around them. I think it also comes from a place of like, you know, I think they may fail to see where the value of their brand is. I think in some ways, Apple may have a different idea of what is valuable about Apple than what people think is valuable about Apple. I mean, I feel like the theme of this episode has been companies that are not that are not keeping a pace with the reality of what their products have become. I mean, I just feel like the entire theme of this episode is like, hey, we've all learned a huge amount. It's time for you to update like a bunch of stuff about, like, we've all been doing this for a while, and now it's like time to rethink some of the kind of the base level notions that we all had about how this is supposed to work. And I think companies are either going to be able to adapt, or they're going to fight it, and they're going to find themselves in a really difficult position. I think you have to be open to adapting. And with the way Apple's doing things and the way Nintendo's doing things, it's going to be very hard to sustain the more the audience moves on and away from that way of thinking. And that's increasingly happening. And so you're going to find, we're going to hear more and more situations like this. Also, having an administration, at least in the US, having a government that functions, that isn't just full of criminals who are scheming for their own personal gain and are actually trying to do the job of what we put them in office for, I think it's going to have a really... We've been in a stasis for the last 5 years, essentially. You know? I mean, for about 5 years, like since the last, you know, really the election till now, we've been in this weird stasis where nothing much was getting done. I mean, nothing has gotten done that actually matters to most people. What has gotten done in government has been a bunch of stuff that serves the richest.
For example, literally no infrastructure work has been done, and our infrastructure has been rotting since before this year.
I mean, if anything, we've been just rolling back progress, right? Like progress on security,
showerheads,
progress on infrastructure. I mean, all we've been doing water the last pressure. 4 years. I mean, I hate to make this about Trump, but there is a big part of this that, like, all of this stuff has just been in, like, on ice because there are no people.
Nobody's running the ship.
Nobody's paying attention to any of it. I mean, look at what's been going on with the pandemic. It's a great example. Apply the way they gave up on coronavirus with, you know, everything. Just apply that, and you can see that there's like we haven't addressed any of this stuff. And so it's really tough. I mean, it's really, really tough to figure out, you know, like how. You know, what it's going to look like, I think it's going to be very different. I think these companies are going to be in for a very rude awakening. Unless all of the administration jobs are filled with tech industry people.
Lobbyists.
You never know. Anyhow, we should wrap up. We didn't even talk about Cyberpunk. We'll have to wait till the next episode to discuss Cyberpunk.
Okay.
Because I have a lot more to say after playing it for a week straight.
Well, I think, you know, next week is the holidays, and happy holidays, Tony. We're saying happy holidays again, folks. We're saying
happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Christmas is dead. Over. The war on Christmas has succeeded. Christianity is back underground, under a rock where it should stay.
You're not allowed to say Christmas now. Biden said so.
No more Jesus. No more Christmas.
I don't even want to see you wearing a cross.
The socialist won. Anyhow, sorry. Go ahead. So, yes, the holidays
are
coming
next
up.
Week. I think we'll probably do, just so everybody knows, like a shorter, more specific, fun episode next week because obviously there isn't going to be much news and we want to keep it light for the holidays. Yeah, a lot of suicides. Holidays. Let's keep it light.
It's the holidays, you know? And anyhow, yes. But then what?
You know, but then we'll be back and the new year is going to come with interviews and stuff like that.
So excited.
But I'm just as a heads up to everybody. And speaking of keeping it light, let's talk about nice things.
Oh, my God. Let's do it. Go ahead. You start.
Oh, boy. I got to start.
You don't have to. We don't even have to do nice things. Maybe you don't have any nice things.
No, I have nice things. I watched The Queen's Gambit, which I didn't love. I didn't love it.
It's very mediocre.
It's very mediocre. It would not have been the sensation that it apparently was without, obviously, the pandemic. But I will say, I am enjoying that I've run out of television. And I'm kind of enjoying just giving random things a chance. Just being like, all right, like, let's see. Sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes it's a really bad thing. I watched, you know, that Soderbergh Meryl Streep movie on HBO Max. I don't know if it was good. I don't know if it was bad, but I'm enjoying that I'm like switching it up a little bit and varying my palate because obviously, you know, there's only so much Westworld you can watch and so much Real Housewives. Like I usually have the same things that I consume. Although I will say, speaking of TV, Please watch Real Housewives of Potomac and Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. They're very insane and very good. It's the craziest shit I've ever seen on television. There's one woman on the show on Salt Lake City is a cult leader married to her grandfather. I know that I've said this before, but I need to underline for you guys. She's a cult leader who married her grandfather and is in a fight with a woman because she told her that she smells like a hospital. It's a great show. It's very intelligent, and I would encourage everyone to tune in. But what I was going to say is that I like that I'm broadening my horizons. I'm kind of reading books I wouldn't have picked up. Things that, you know, I having run out of like the usual little like treadmill, like mouse wheel that I'm usually hamster wheel that I'm usually on from Hollywood of just the same things that attract my attention, is kind of nice. Yeah. And I'm learning about things that I wouldn't have otherwise spent any time on. Obviously this is going to get old fast, but for now it's nice.
Well, I should say, I think, you know, I'm in fact, maybe I'll do my nice thing based on what your nice thing was. Having exactly the same experience, have basically run out of content. And I mean, they've stopped making content, you know, basically, you know, and we're all waiting on the Mission Impossible.
I was going to say, Mission Impossible.
Except for Mission Impossible, which is the high watermark and everybody should be paying attention. And, you know, Tom Cruise is on the phone with Warner Brothers and. Lionsgate, I don't know who he's on the phone with, but if you haven't listened to Tom Cruise's rant, I actually agree with Tom Cruise's rant for the most part. He's like, you can't violate the COVID guidelines because like then nobody will be able to have a job. And it's actually like, I mean, he's being a horrible person.
I mean, the worst person you know at. Just made a great point.
Right. Literally. Well, I mean, you know, I'm a big Cruise missile fan.
I know.
But yeah, it's great. But anyhow, so content is sort of run dry, which is how I ended up watching Schitt's Creek, which I think has been, you know, a very good break from my normal sort of watching habits. But we've been like, Laura and I have been kind of desperate. We're like, God, we wish there was like a really good thriller or something to watch. And we got the service BritBox, which is like a BBC offshoot like streaming service. We're like, let's check it out. And we started watching this show, which actually is great. Called The Victim. I don't know if you've heard about it.
It's a
2019 TV series. It's a Scottish miniseries. It's four episodes. It stars Kelly MacDonald, who you may know from her like first movie was Trainspotting. She plays like Renton's like girlfriend or whatever.
Oh yeah.
But she was in Boardwalk Empire. She's been a ton of stuff. And it's this really interesting amongst others. It's a really interesting concept for a show about. Without giving too much away, it's about a person who posts something online that gets somebody nearly killed. Basically, it's very ripped from our headlines. It's like somebody instigated violence by putting something online, and it is a trial about like whether or not that this person was justified in what they put online that you know led to this violent act, you know, but also about, you know, how, like, what kind of power something that seems so innocent could have, you know, the what kind of, like, and it is true. Like, you know, when you look at, like, in the Trump era, you know, he's inciting people to violence. Like, people have died because of things that Trump has tweeted, you know? Mm-hmm. People have gone on shooting sprees because of shit that Trump has said. And I think this show's really an interesting encapsulation of it. It actually touches, you could read it in a couple of different ways. There's like, because the person who's sort of like written about online is a man who's accused of a crime. And there's a lot of like background stuff about men being accused. You could actually read, there's a reading of the show where you could be like, oh, this is sort of about like the Me Too movement and like, you know, be careful who you accuse. And like, you know, if you're going to speak up, you better be sure or whatever. So there's an interesting read that actually kind of forces you to engage with that a little bit. But I mean, it definitely is not, I don't think it's like a pro, you know, guys who got accused of sexual assault or anything, but it's more like what happens when you put that in public, right? What happens? It's not a Me Too thing at all. By the way, I should say it's not a sexual assault show. It's not what it's about. So trigger warning for anybody who may be thinking it is, I mean, it's about something that's grisly, but it's not that. But anyhow, it's an interesting, super interesting show. It's four episodes. We're on the third episode. It's incredibly well acted. It's got a ton of great performances. It's a very small story. It's like, you know, everything these days, I feel like everything I watch tries to be sprawling and unending and filled. I think Tenet is a great example of a of a movie that was made so that there'd be lots of Reddit threads on it, you know? And honestly, it's fucking exhausting. Like, Tenet is a bad movie with a dumb plot and completely absurd characters and activity in the film that tries to pass itself off as really smart and really, really wants to, like, create a universe of people who want to talk about it and try to unpack it. And, like, honestly, I'm so exhausted by things that require my extracurricular unpacking to enjoy. Like, if you're, like, it's like Westworld is a good example. Like, Westworld's entire premise was, like, you're going to spend hours and hours outside of the show thinking about, talking about, and trying to understand what's going on. It's like, you know what? We've been through this. We've seen this play out a number of times, and it's getting really old. It's like, I would like to just be confronted with a good story and compelling characters, and you tell me those stories, and I understand it completely end-to-end, and it makes me think or feel something. That's, like, to me, successful entertainment. You know, like I just, you know, we watched The Sopranos. I didn't finish The Sopranos and go, like, what's it all mean? You know, I didn't have to, like, do an, you know, a review of all of the details to put it together to understand, you know, what happens at the end of it. It leaves, you know, there's interesting questions it leaves, but there's nothing that's, like, trying to challenge you to go on Reddit and, like, you know, find Easter eggs. I think that this show, The Victim, is works in a very similar way, which is, like, it's a small story about human beings. It tells the story beautifully. It tells it straight through. Obviously, I'm not finished with it yet. And like every episode and every almost every, you know, minute of every episode, I'm like, wow, like, I am curious about, like, the truth about certain things, but it's done in such a accessible, linear, like, way that it doesn't require, like, I'm not going to go read about this. And it's so nice to just experience it in the moment. Anyhow, I think so. My nice thing is this show, but also I think finding a distraction that doesn't try to overcomplicate the storytelling process, which I think is, like, when I watch a great show or a great movie, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to, is this telling me a story that matters? Can I absorb what matters about the story? And I think, like, too many things these days, well, before we stop making content, too many things are trying too goddamn hard to, like, impress me with their intelligence or their Easter eggs or their mysteries, instead of actually just telling a story.
Or treating like very normal or very fine, perfectly fine ideas or themes as, like, the most profound, mind-bending thing. And you're like, you don't have to do, like, it can just be a good show. It doesn't need, you don't need to have all this ceremony around it.
Yeah, I can't stop thinking about Tenet in the sense of, I know, I mean, if you go online, you will find plenty of, I mean, apparently Christopher Nolan has a bunch of guys who are like Elon Musk type of guys to him, who are like, this person is the most supreme genius and you must love
everything
he does.
It's Batman v Superman guys.
And if you don't, then I will fucking hunt you down and kill you. Yeah. But truly, like, it truly is, I mean, I truly feel like it exposes everything wrong with Christopher Nolan movies. It's like all of it is on display, but it is exactly the opposite of what I'm talking about, where it's like, he doesn't have a story. He doesn't have characters. He has an idea that he thinks is so interesting that it's worth 2.5 hours of your time.
He's got a gimmick,
you won't be able to understand it. And he doesn't even try to help you understand it without going on Reddit and reading threads about it and reading Wikipedia entries about it and digging into books on time travel theory and physics. And it's like, yeah, I don't want to do that. Like, if your movie's not good when I watch it, then it's not good.
Yeah.
Like, if your movie requires me to do homework afterwards, then you made a bad movie and you're trying to pass it off as something that's a lot smarter than you think it is.
Yeah.
Anyhow, but this is the Victim is the opposite. It's just a good story, interesting story with great performances and a very compelling sort of, like, arc, and surprises the way that you want in, like, a great sort of thriller. And it's just like, yeah, it's just like a nice piece of, in a sea of content where most of it's bad and I've watched all the good stuff. It's a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm going to go breathe some of that air.
Let's do it. BritBox, baby.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that is our show for this week. We'll be back next week with more tomorrow. And as always, I wish you and your family the very best, especially during this holiday season, which absolutely is not and will never be Christmas.